Is there any place in Africa to rival the mystery and the mystique of Congo? Henry Stanley explored there, Joseph Conrad's Mr. Kurtz went mad there, and Muhammad Ali fought there. The subtitle of British journalist Tim Butcher's book about this vast country, Blood River, describes it as Africa's broken heart. But first, I had to find it. A long day of flying and waiting culminated in a 2 a.m. arrival at Rwanda's Kigali Airport, where the taxis had long fled. Eventually I negotiated a ride to the Village Motel, where the sign promised, "Our service is the best." I was assigned the Burundi room. There was no seat on the toilet and no soap on the basin. The TV screen remained stubbornly blank. I shrugged and lay down. 3 hours later, there was a hammering at the door. The driver was back and grinning that it was time for breakfast. We sat alone in the restaurant area and listened to the offstage sounds of cupboard doors, crockery and footsteps, all seeming to take an eternity. Finally, the waiter appeared, walking slowly, setting the table even more slowly. He was a young man, but placed and adjusted each item with the painful deliberateness of a white-haired family servant. A jug of hot milk was the only drink proffered. I asked if there was any chance of a coffee. After another longueur, the coffee appeared. I took a gulp. It was, without a shadow of doubt, the most unutterably, unfathomably dreadful cup of coffee ever made. I quickly reached for the water to erase the memory. We began the 3-hour journey to the Democratic Republic of Congo. I dozed on the back seat as the driver put on a CD. The joyful, bouncy music was like a movie cliché about Africa as I, the European blank canvas, gazed out at children running carefree, women dressed in a blaze of colour, and bustling market stalls crouching under lush green hills. We went higher and higher, and I awoke to see a long march along the road, each man, woman or child gripping a yellow jerry can and walking with a purpose. Presumably they were all bound for the nearest water source. A boy broke ranks and stood on the corner, watching me. I went back to sleep. "This is it, wake up," announced the driver, helping me offload my bags, seemingly a little too keen to be rid of me. He drove off and I stood on a dark patch of land, not entirely sure where to go next. A few curious locals turned to look, apparently unaccustomed to seeing someone so obviously not from around here. Adjacent to this rough, unromantic, unmysterious clearing, I could see Lake Kivu glinting in the sunshine. I found a shabby brick office and got my passport stamped. "So," I said, "is Dio Congo that way?" I pointed at an inviting piece of coastline on my right. The woman laughed and shook her head. "No, it's over there." I looked to my left at the rather less appealing face of Goma. But I was grateful she had saved me from a week of wandering round the wrong country. And so, as with many border posts around the world, the moment of crossing the line was rather anticlimactic. Unsteady under heavy bags, and watched by a small audience, I penetrated Congo in the old-fashioned way, on foot. Goma was once a popular tourist stop for those adventurous enough to drive from one end of the continent to the other. Not any more. Hotels such as the Ihuzi still offer fabulous views and boat trips on the lake, but others have succumbed to cockroaches or turned to dust. Anyone trying a road trip won't get very far on the rutted, potholed, jolting terrain. I couldn't see any traffic lights, but the skies are busy with the spaghetti of electricity cables. This is one of the poorest countries in the world. The freshly painted logos of mobile phone networks can't disguise the dilapidated state of most buildings. I could see people sitting in grime on the streets trying to sell whatever they can. Live chickens, sacks of grain, flimsy towers of eggs, pairs of shoes spread out before them. Others occupied concrete shells and offered fruit and vegetables from their unclean floors. I saw women balancing plastic baskets full of trainers on their heads. A one-legged man travelling in a chikudu, a sort of wooden bicycle-cum-scooter peculiar to Goma. A crowd of men and women gathered around a wooden shack, entranced by what appeared to be a 1970s kung fu movie from Hong Kong. I saw children playing on a hillock made from hardened clumps of black lava. In the far distance was the silhouette of the Nyiragongo volcano, a perpetual menace to this city that erupted earlier this month. I thought about living in the shadow of Pompeii. Yet along the road to the airport, Goma changes. Coiled barbed wire runs along a high wall either side of a gun tower. Rows and rows of white tents are followed by white military vehicles and white aircraft. This is the base of the United Nations here, the biggest peacekeeping operation the world has ever seen. I asked Alan Doss, the Welsh-born head of the UN mission, about the magnetism of Congo. The Great Rush for Africa. You had people of principle like Livingstone, adventurers like Stanley. It's so vast, it's so massive, it's so magnificent. This is truly a magnificent country, with incredible diversity among its peoples. That has attracted travellers and adventurers, the good and not so good, and it was all so recent. It's hard to believe that 2 centuries after much of Asia was explored, the centre of Africa was unknown to the outside world. It will continue to exercise its fascination and frustration. That's Congo.